If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
Thank you.
By the way, my wife did want to thank you again for giving me some slack yesterday.
Always. It worked out well for me because I've got some other stuff to do today. So I got to spend last night watching Vintage Mysteries with my husband. So it worked out.
And I saw a picture of the two of you together, and unless things have changed, I think you guys go to the same hairstyle.
Pretty much, yeah. There's definitely a phenotype thing going on.
I cannot rock the long hair anymore.
He's blonder than I am, and I'm more on the redhead auburn end, but definitely the Nordic ancestors shine through. The only time I've repeatedly followed the wrong man through a crowd was in Finland. They all have headbanger hair, and they're all about 6'3" and broad.
I haven't done that with the wife. I did remember when I was young one time get mixed up in a mall and ended up following the other. So. Yeah, he's rocking some serious hair. I'll give him credit for that.
He's got pandemic hair right now, so it's even more. He hasn't had a haircut in 3 years. I think it's out of control.
I've got to get a haircut. Last couple of times, I just put it myself.
Yeah, I just started going back to see my hairdresser like middle of last year, and it's such a relief. I had gotten to the point where it was strangling me, and I wasn't quite bold enough to just remember. So Lynn was super busy at work. So
it happens. Sometimes you start something and then you're like, you know, I don't have as much time as I'd hoped for. And I know, for instance, that's why you guys all kind of took a break. It's just so much going on.
Yeah.
I told you, I'm going to tell you, it's like, if you guys don't want to cast back together, I'll at least be willing to host, you know, get the five of you, six of you, talk about what's been going on. It was a one-off. Don't come back next month. We're doing this again.
Yeah. No, I mean, I feel in general really good about what the Squeakcast did. I think it was kind of unique in the market at the time. And now there are a lot of other people doing not exactly what we were doing. You're doing their own spin on what we were doing. And I think that's, you know, that's as it should be. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, no, I'm just saying, as you mentioned the pandemic, there's a lot of people sitting else now.
Yeah.
I've got time. I've got a webcam. And I think a lot of stuff too is it's just, they have made podcasting super simple. Like that. I'm mainly doing it on podcast, YouTube.
Yeah.
The tools have just gotten a lot of free.
No, I think we were using Audacity, if I remember correctly. And it, you know, doing the whole, everybody record their own stream, and then somebody had to engineer it and combine it.
Which was actually good. A lot more professional. This stuff, like I said, the stuff I've done, I haven't been upset with. I've heard some people where they actually do, it's where somebody would record your audio or my audio, and then somebody with more skills than I did put those together. And I think that sounds correct audio and not transmitted over.
Yeah. No, it was, and at the time it was really the only way to do it because internet speeds weren't fast enough.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, We all sounded terrible to each other.
Hey, I'm old enough to remember getting on the internet and listening to the crackle as put them.
Oh, yes.
I couldn't imagine any of this back in the day.
I used to be able to read about as fast as my modem could download plain text. So it was about 12. I read about 1200 baud. So.
All right. So I'm going to go ahead and kick off the intro here real quick. So. Hey, welcome to the channel. My name is Edward, also known as Griftkin here on Twitch. If you look down below, there's a little heart-shaped button. That is the follow button, so go ahead and feel free to click on that. Helps you find me later. Also, there is a subscribe button. I'm not a big fan of asking for money. However, if you do have an Amazon Prime subscription, you do get a free Twitch subscription you can use once a month. If you want to use that on me and help me, pay for my book habit, I would appreciate that. If you're watching this later on YouTube, down below there's the subscribe button as opposed to Twitch. Subscribe doesn't cost you anything on YouTube. That is their version of the follow button. So feel free to go ahead and click on that. And also if you're watching this on YouTube, if you liked it, hit the like. That'll also help other people find it. I do appreciate that. All right. Not right now, but if you also want to click on the about button back again on Twitch, it'll give you all of the links to all of the different social media, which would also lead you to the YouTube channel where all of these interviews will be put up about 24 hours after the Twitch stream. Come on in. Hope you enjoy it. And I hope everybody has a nice day. All right. So that is the intro. I know it's not really that long because I recorded it, but it feels long. My wife would say that's fucking. All right. So we are here today with Elizabeth Bear. Tends to go Bear. You're going to be discussing quite a few things, hopefully, but eventually, the main thing is is dropping, and I forgot to write it down, June
28th, yes, I believe.
28th. I had the 8th in my head, so you've got the 20th, so yeah, June 28th. I feel like that is correct. And I think that's also part of the problem. I'll admit it right now. I think because of the June 28th, I had it in my mind that we were. I didn't get you some stuff ahead of time that I normally get you because I was pushing to get through this. I do apologize for that. But yeah, June 28th, definitely. I have to say, I met you, quote unquote, say that as you introduced me, which I loved.
Oh.
But thank you. Yes, I am loving. But yes, I have discovered you. I knew the name, but I hadn't read.
It is never too late. I'm thrilled to still be in the industry after 20 years. It's always like any kind of career in the arts is always kind of living by your wits, and a lot of my sort of matriculating class of writers have gone off to greener pastures or decided to do something else with their lives. And just the fact that I'm still here is an incredible privilege. So don't feel like you're discovering me late. Feel like you're discovering me when there's an established body of work.
Well, the downside is I'm one of those people. I mean, I feel like, you know, if you're a big sci-fi person, you kind of keep a big mystery person, you kind of keep. I love way too many genres. I can't keep anything. Especially when there are people like you, John McIntyre, for have a huge body of work up with.
I think she's got me pretty well licked at this point.
Well, you know, everybody's chasing James Patterson. That's it's like Monday. There's a new book out.
But Seanan writes all of hers herself. True. Seanan is three people all by herself. James Patterson is like four people all being James Patterson, as far as I know. So.
Yes. He does have a lot of James Patterson, and which isn't always a bad thing, but yes, it has become, I think, a bit of a James Patterson is. But I do love the fact that he at least.
Yes, I really enjoyed the poker tournaments.
Yes, and the snide comments, which I'm sure James had to sign off. While I was in the bathroom. But first and foremost, I just wanted to start off just because of the fact that I kind of teased Sean in a little bit about you as well. I noticed your first Hugo, for all of the books that you've written, your first Hugo was for this.
Actually, no. I have two short fiction Hugos, which were 2007 and 2009, okay. And then the Squeecast is 2012 and 2013. So I'm splitting the difference. I'm 50-50 for fan work and pro work. I feel like that's.
I think wherever I looked it up, maybe that was just that they had them in and I didn't actually.
Yeah. It's okay.
But yeah, as it's apparently the Squeecast. I wish I had been in it at the time. I tried looking it up, but I can't find the original. I'm like 39 originals. But yeah, if anybody hasn't checked out the Squeecast yet, it's very good. Hopefully something. Before we get into the Lotus King, that I did want to get into Good Mother.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely loved that. Got me to see that it's listed. It's obviously is there any chance we're going to
I think it's technically a novelette. It might be a long one. I'm not 100% certain on that, but there actually is another story existing, which is called Hacksilver, which was in fantasy and science fiction some years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. I think the Internet Science Fiction Database can tell you when. Or my website, I suppose.
Hopefully it's on there.
www.elizabethbear.com, updated occasionally.
and that link will be on the YouTube.
Yes, yeah. So there is one other story with that character.
Okay, I'll look that up.
And I can actually, I'll send you a manuscript copy.
Oh, appreciate
it. I have some ambitions to either do a collection with that character or maybe write a novel about him. He is sort of my loving homage to Norse myth and Diane Duane sorcerer characters, I think.
Yeah, he was a very interesting character. And like I said, I looked you up on, I think, a series in Orc. I think Red Mother was just included in the quote unquote Nevada's list, so I couldn't tell that they
were interconnected. And it is a part of the same world as the Lotus Kingdoms and the Eternal Sky books. The same narrative continuity. There's a whole bunch of stuff that is sort of loosely linked and takes place in the same sort of, I can't even really say continuity because there's not necessarily characters that move from one book to another, but the same setting.
Gotcha. Yeah, I've never been so emotionally attached to a cow before. I hope he makes it. He makes it. All right. By the way, I did have one question before we get into how is it, I've talked to other authors and you get to be both. How is it being married to another author?
It's mostly great. It is really nice being married to somebody who understands that sometimes you're just like, just slide pizza under the door. And
the reason others always have those high hung doors.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why we live in an old house. So you can get the flat food under the door. And So, I mean, like that aspect of it is nice. Like somebody who understands the vagaries and the struggles of, you know, dealing with the publishing industry and trying to be creative and innovative 24/7 and come, you know, there's an Edward Gorey line about the process of revision, which is not only do you have to get rid of the things that don't work, you have to come up with entirely new things that do work, and, you know, that, but, and they have to be different things somehow.
Right.
So that, and by the time you've been doing this for 15, 20 years, you sort of start to feel like, didn't I do this before? Haven't I, like, am I repeating myself? Am I becoming really predictable in my like character arcs or plot arcs? The hard part is not the ideas, it's the execution of the ideas, I guess is what I'm saying. And having somebody around who understands that, and who also will, you know, make you coffee.
No, it doesn't take offense when they're like, I need some time.
Yep. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'll be down to dinner in 15 minutes. Just start without me, you know,
although
whatever.
I think if you did get that like prison tray, you know, opening set into the door, that would make it quite an icebreaker there. Slide the food through the tray, you know.
Yeah.
Opening, good. Yeah, I've always been, especially, and I know it's not the same as being an author, obviously, but comic writer. Like, you got to come up with a new one every single day for some of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm just like, you know, I can make a funny here and there. I couldn't imagine having to do that. And when it's an author, when it's your job, I could sit down maybe. I could maybe write a story for fun. I could imagine. One of the reasons I'm interested in talking to authors is not even necessarily pick their brain. It's just, love you guys. If I find somebody who can write, I want to introduce them to.
Well, that we appreciate it, because the number one reason somebody buys a book is because they already read a book by that author and liked it. And the number two reason they buy a book is because one of their friends said, hey, dude, you got to read this. It's cool.
Yeah.
So
I used to work at a
thank
store,
you.
So I love that. I've definitely introduced a few people. Like, what do you like to read? And you can kind of, if you've read enough books, you're like, okay, if you like so-and-so, you're going to like so-and-so.
And yeah.
I've even told people, if you don't like it, you can come back and yell at me. It's like, I'll take it. But yeah, I love The Red Mother. And then I got in trying to get both of them in. I had it. But I did get Stone in the Skull Red. Talk a little bit. I did start on the. Not necessarily finished product, I'm sure.
That's pretty close. I think I sent you the. An advanced reader copy.
Yeah, it was
so there's going to be like some proofreading, yeah, but it's comma fiddling exactly. At that point.
Let me say first and foremost that I feel like these guys could have had their own. I just love Gabe.
they were the inspiration for the series. I had written a short story or two about them.
It definitely seems like they could have their own TV show, Each of the Dead Men. It's even got the name already. There.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're. I have wanted for a long time to write sort of a Fritz Lieber-esque, you know, bantering ne'er-do-well mercenaries. And for a long time, I just couldn't figure out like who I wanted as those characters. At some point, what often happens to me is that I will have two or three different ideas sort of floating around. And if I give them enough time, they will sort of puzzle piece themselves together. And there's almost like a click sensation when two things go together. And I had been thinking about writing a story about a character who was sort of inspired by L. Frank Baum's Tin Man, The Wizard of Oz. because I don't know if you've ever read The Wizard of Oz, but the Tin Man's backstory is grim.
A lot of our quote unquote favorite childhood stories, the original stories are pretty grim.
Yeah. Like he's a woodman who was so incompetent. He kept chopping off bits of his body and having them replaced by metal. And then until eventually he was entirely metal. And I'm like, wouldn't it be interesting to write sort of an automaton or golem character who chose that for reasons of their own, like chose to become an automaton. You know, we all, I think many people who deal with any kind of like chronic pain or injury often have a kind of, you know, oh God, I just want to be a brain in a jar thing. And a lot of people who feel vulnerable often feel like they want to have more armor. So I kind of tried to put those, those experiences of my own into that character. And they wound up being one of my favorite characters of all time.
yeah. And I try to avoid spoilers, but I don't think this is really a spoiler. I love the fact that, Gage has no eyes. But they still have, and it's not really explained. And I actually think, I'm going to tell you right now, I love the fact that to a great extent you don't explain, quote unquote. Or at least not in any parts that I've read. Because I think sometimes you try to explain it. I love the suspension of that you can kind of get when you're in a story like that. And then when somebody decides, well, I have to explain exactly how the magic, then I start, my other side of my brain kicks in. I wouldn't. So I just love that it's just kind of there. But the fact that he can sense almost everything except can't really sense.
Yeah.
And the fact that it is like, you imagine trying to be that character who's obviously super strong, but if you don't have that sense of touch, but you got to kind of remember.
Yeah.
Got to be something that's always on.
Yeah, I think I have often thought about, and this is a thing I've occasionally seen addressed in comic books, but like that superhero thing of when you are super strong and, or super large or both, and the world just is not built to fit you. And the world is, you know, by your standards, incredibly fragile. You have, like, if you were Superman, you would have to maneuver through the world constantly second guessing yourself and constantly measuring every motion you took. I mean, it's no mystery to me that, you know, Superman wants to screw off to Antarctica to a fortress of solitude, you know, made of stone and ice every once in a while, because at least he can close a door without worrying that he's going to tear down the apartment building. And that was so that, you know, it's very interesting to me to write those characters who have to be so self-aware and so careful lest they hurt somebody. I mean, on some level, that's all of us in our, you know, personal relationships. So it becomes a relatable metaphor, but it's also just like an interesting, make it like one of the great ways, I think, to talk about certain aspects of the human condition in science fiction and fantasy is you can exaggerate them for effect. You can sort of test them to destruction and thereby make them evident and manifest for the reader.
I'm actually glad you brought up superheroes, because one of the things that I enjoyed about that you engage, I think there's a lot of other authors that, given that concept, Gage would just be the, like, okay, here's a bunch of soldiers on.
Mm-hmm.
And we really don't see, again, I haven't finished quite yet the last book. We really don't see him doing that. He doesn't just like, oh, you know, I can beat up everybody, so I'm going to beat up everybody. He's not necessarily the, oh, we're running into this problem or we're facing something, we'll just go to the world. And he's much more thoughtful. He's a perfect foil for the dead man. and I love all of your little snippets about if he'd had a mouth, he would smirk or something like that.
I drive my copy editors crazy.
but I love it because, let's face it, there are people that you know that you have to know them to understand their movie. Mm-hmm. There are people who are stoic. People like that nobody knows when she's joking. You know, even you got to know her to know. It's like, he's like, okay, that was a joke. I say she'd be, because she's very, you know, I say a joke and people can tell when I'm deadpanning. My mm-hmm. wife deadpans and it's.
So my mom's side of the family is Finno-Swedish, and we have a family tradition that when you are telling a joke, you raise your hand. And this has evolved over time into then the people around you raise their hand to indicate that they're laughing.
Gotcha. All right. I'm going to do
so it. I feel your, I feel a deep connection to your wife right now.
Gotcha. All right. I'm going to do a small pause right now. This has happened to me before. Only two of us on here, which means we have a time limit, but for some reason it's telling me.
Oh.
Well, it's only supposed to do that if. People on. So what? Oh, Gaging the Dead Man. So the yes. other thing, a couple other characters I thought were God made. He's not quite right. yeah, a little self-inflicted pain there. Uses it well. Especially the end of the Stone in the Skull is like, okay, that's not where I thought that was going.
no.
And trying to avoid spoilers here, but yeah, that was ow. That hurt.
Yeah, that character. And it's interesting writing that character because they're especially. They're an ungendered character, and in the narrative, I generally tried to, at least before the thing you're talking about, mm-hmm. try to not use pronouns for them, which is a trick I picked up from Vonda McIntyre et al., and which makes it, of course, then hard to discuss that character. So
pronouns can be difficult. I get that.
Yeah. Yeah. So
especially if you're not trying to say one word.
Yeah. So I tend to use like they them pronouns for that particular character when talking about them as a from outside of the narrative, as opposed to the pronouns that other characters may use for them.
And I think there was, and I don't think that, I don't know if this is the word you used, but I think they're
yeah.
from another character's they couldn't quite but yeah, definitely gave you a different character right from the other one.
Yeah, I sort of wish I had that character had ever had point of view, but I was trying to in writing an epic fantasy, I was also trying to limit the point of view proliferation. This is a thing that, and you always, I say you, I mean me. I always do sort of wind up adding a couple of points of view as the narrative goes along, because I like the my friend, Catherine Addison calls it parallax. Like when you get the view of situations from different points of view, or from a person who maybe you thought was a villain and now you're inside their head and you're seeing what their motivations are, and it changes how the narrative hits for the reader. So it, you know, there's a character in the first book who is perceived by one of the protagonists as a villain, and then in the second book we get his point of view and we see the like desperate situation that he's in and how he's trying to save as much as possible himself. It's just that their goals are in conflict because politics. And I find that sort of thing just really fun to write.
I think too, on the point of view thing, I think certain characters are almost better if you don't have their point of view. I think it gives that a little bit more air of mystery as to
what
always be by their head.
And that character knows too much, honestly, to be given point of view. Yeah.
And I don't know if you do any from her point of view. Roma Randall, how do you say her name?
Yeah.
I think one of those two where you don't think you could understand this. She understands if you were at least to a certain.
Yeah, it would be extreme stunt writing.
Yep. Well, unless you know how many people really have, you know, life. Know what somebody would be thinking after all that time.
Yeah. That I love. I've had that character in my head literally since I think junior high school. And I'm just so like, it took me that long to figure out how to write her.
Gotcha.
Because like my early attempts were all way too, I don't know, way too prone to what Diana Wynne Jones calls gnomic pronouncements. you know, like had no personality other than being old and slightly dangerous. And
that's what you get to be when you're old.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm enjoying it.
All right. So before I go any further, I just want to Element 72, by the way. Hey, Bear. What was the other thing I was going to say? Oh, the fact that you're probably old. You ever watched Spencer for Hire at the movie?
Yeah. Yeah.
Talking about points of view, I kind of feel like, I don't know if you remember, but they did a spinoff with Hawk.
Mm-hmm.
It lasted like, it's just because he wasn't the same character. Thing was from his point. He needed to be the mystery. Amen. Kind of the cool guy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can't, like, if you're inside the Foz's head, what he's thinking about is that his boots don't fit, right? And boy, this leather jacket is hot. Mm-hmm. And from the outside.
Exactly. I mean, but I do love the Foz. I think one of my favorite, I can't remember. Get a quote. He asked some kid who he was. Oh, he was like, I saved your brother. He's like, hey, my brother, what did you do? It's like, I quit hitting him. It's like, oh, you're that Fonz. It's like, yeah, but that's a totally different story if you're watching that show from the Fonz.
Yeah.
But I love the, for instance, the God made, and at least what I've seen, Curl.
That's fine.
I'm just not 100% sure I'm pronouncing it right. I got a little lucky since I was running low on time. I did read some of the book, and I read a book for Stone in the Skull. Girl, I didn't get the pleasure of hearing somebody else pronounce it first. But that's how it's said.
Yeah. I think we're going with Carol Mirandel. So
I tried to go, but I figured it was relatively phonetic.
Yeah, I think my general attitude when making up weird alien names is that they're not designed for human mouths and tongues, so whatever you do with it, you can just get it out any way you can.
Well, it's hard to write a fantasy book about Bob. It's just
Yeah.
All right. This thing's got about a minute. I'm going to see if it blows.
All right.
A couple of quotes. Again, I don't think either one of these are spoilers, but a couple of quotes I'll do. And that's, it was not the first corpse she had washed in her. It was by far the most. I love that line.
She's had a bad couple of books, and she really deserved that.
it is not. I was feeling sorry for her at the end of book one, and of course, like I said, I haven't quite got book two in, but I started out book three, and I'm like, it hasn't gotten a whole lot better for her. I'm hoping we wrap up, a little bit nicer, but we'll have to see what happens. Again, no spoilers. Oh, hang on now. Yeah, I do apologize for that. I am on the road. I brought everything with me, so my mic is down here below me instead of up on my arm where it's usually at, closer to my face. So I will try to speak up a little bit. Wait, there we go. All right, now let me screen it is. Okay, perfect. Sorry.
All right.
On the plus side, that shouldn't happen again for another 30 minutes, so I think we should be good for that. I do apologize again to everybody. This will all be edited out. My apologies.
It's all part. Hey, it's part of the pandemic fun, right?
But as I was speaking about the quotes that I loved, I did have another one that I got a particular chuckle out of. You have a way of folding startling revelations into matter-of-fact summaries of peril. Moderately disconcerting.
I don't actually remember where that one came in.
That's after Earl Mirandel kind of went over what they're facing, the problems that they're facing.
Right.
And he's like, eh. But I get that, you know. This is weird. By the way, one of the person was mentioning that I'm coming in a little lower. Can you hear me well?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think the problem is, again, I usually have this up on a boom mic arm. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I'm working not on location today. So I'm not where I'm normally at. Everything's kind of like set up here. In fact, I'm trying not to touch this table because it's very solid. Gaming table at home, and plastic table here that shakes. I didn't want to give anybody. No, at least one more, a couple other characters I didn't talk about without getting another character that I loved. It almost feels like she starts out as a side character, but I think she steals every scene. The poetess, Mnuhan.
Yeah. She's sort of secretly my favorite character too. She showed up in the Eternal Sky books. I think it was the second book, as she was supposed to just be sort of a bit character who had one particular narrative and plot purpose, and just wound up walking away with the book.
Well, the thing is, she's a poetess. I mean, basically, you've written an author into your series. She's one of my favorite characters.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm still a little, you know, love gauge in the dead mental. Every time she comes in, it's like, okay, we're just paying attention to it.
She's actually the only character that is in both series. So because they're 50, set about 50 years apart, and she's, you know, a young glamorous singer in the first series, and then in this one she's wise and a little crotchety, but at the sort of at the peak of her powers. And I was sort of in writing her, I was thinking of like Ursula Le Guin and Toni Morrison, and mm-hmm. like women like that who have achieved sort of that level of literary ability and perspective and snarkiness. Right. And so I really like was trying to channel that sort of feeling in her, and I'm glad, really glad it came through.
Well, I feel like especially and again, I love Gage and the Dead Man, and oh my goodness, ending. But I love your female character. The way that you wrote, especially the Ashni.
Yeah.
But the fact that, you know, these women are taking care of basically their entire kingdoms while working in kingdoms that won't let them sit on the throne. Apparatus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but, you know, they don't care. They're doing what's best for people. They've also got a little snarkiness in. You know, they there's a little bit of a little snide comment here and there, but they're definitely I wrote down queens just in most of them.
Yeah. Well, that's what the people who are from other cultures call them.
Right.
So,
but they're definitely two different ones. But the fact that they've actually they're two completely different characters, but they both, I just love both of them. And I should have written their name. Again, because I was going off the audiobook, I was back because I mm-hmm. got my book. I do have the actual physical of this. But the, you know, I think it needed you to write. again, officially a random screen pop up. Not doing anything. This will teach me not to work from home. but I can't remember where I was going. But the fact that you said they've got their faults. Don't get me wrong. But also the fact, I love the fact that even though they can't sit on the throne of power, they're both very, very well respected. They have people who are there are some people who are plotting against
them. Mm-hmm.
But even like they're talking about the fact that they go to do something, like their guards, like, no, you can't do, I'm not going to touch you. Can't actually.
Right.
There's because of the fact, well, and I think part of it's the priestess thing and the religion thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think a lot of it's just the fact that, at least among the people who know them, these women command respect.
Yeah.
Sometimes people think they know better than they do. They're like, still in charge.
They both have a charisma, I think, and some leadership ability. Although, you know, one is in her late 40s and one is in her early 20s. So they have that, they have those differences. One has far more confidence in her abilities, but also much more knowledge of the limitations of her station. Mm-hmm. And the other one is in at the deep end and is still figuring things out. I think what you're saying about having, you know, female characters who are very different from each other, even if they seem superficially to be filling the same role, is one of the things we really lose in media when we've got the only girl in the story, you know, the Trinity syndrome, right? If there's only one woman, then it always seems to be a particular type of woman.
Right.
And she has to represent all women in the narrative. Whereas if you've got a dozen female characters, they can all be different people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, I think, much more satisfying to the reader. And even readers who haven't been thinking, oh, gee, I'm hungry for more female characters. Like, just because it satisfies that narrative thing where we want things to feel real and rounded. You know, we look at the world around us and it's roughly 50% women. The, you know, call it what, 45% women, 45% men, 10% people of some non-binary gender, or, you know, I don't know what the actual statistics are, but we'll just, so.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah. We all know a lot of women who are very different people. And when we're in a story and there's just one woman, and it removes verisimilitude from the narrative. And right. What you're saying about the there being women who are, you know, doing, there have always been these women, like women have always done stuff, even if it's not recorded in the history books, even if it's not written about, even if it wasn't taken seriously, you know, medieval women participated in their husband's trades. And often if they were widowed, would take up the trade. Mm-hmm. You have various women in history who were empresses or regents or scientists, or who are all often considered, you know, as helpmeets or whatever, but it turns out in many cases that they had their own lives and agendas and were not completely subsumed to their husband's life path, I guess.
Right.
And it seems like the erasure of that is a very, one of those Victorian things. And I'm not, you know, not a psychologist. I have some anthropology training, but I wonder if some of that is backlash against, you know, in English speaking society, backlash against the person of Queen Victoria as such a powerful symbol of, I don't know, government and empire and all of the things that she was a symbol of. Whereas real quote unquote ordinary women either got pushed into, you know, being the quote unquote angel of the house if they had the means to do that, or working their fingers to the bone constantly and getting no credit for it. And possibly I'm getting a little deep here, but because there are interesting and differentiated female characters up until that period. You know, fairly frequently there are entire novels that are just full of women, and yet we really start getting that the Smurfette thing in, you know,
well, I think
sort of there's
genre too, like you're in fantasy.
Yeah.
And let's face it. And I was kind of thinking which the path you were going down about the fact is, you know, whatever you want to call the stats are still the same, that there's roughly half as many women as there are men. And yet when we get into fantasy, it's usually 80% character. And so therefore you don't get the ability to differentiate them. Other than minors. Female character, she's either got to be magician or a healer. Mm-hmm. Could be a person who's maybe she not started there, but and I'm not going to pick on Vice because I love her, but for instance, and I'm just using characters as an example, the Tika character all of a sudden warrior becomes a warrior. There's two or three roles that they've got us as for yours, because you had more options to see the same breadth of female characters.
Yeah, this is actually one of the things that I really, as a young adult, when I first started reading them, really enjoyed about Roger Zelazny's Amber novels, is that they have some real baked in like 1970s misogyny in there, especially from the point of view of the narrator. But there are six or seven different very well-developed women in there, all of whom are very different people. And I think that in reading those, it was the first time in reading non-feminist fantasy, because I also read a lot of the like 1970s feminist fantasy, some of which is exceptionally good, like Susie McKee Charnas, Joan Devinge, Joanna Russ, you know. But it was the first time I read like a straight adventure fantasy that had that many women in it doing interesting things. It's also, you start out with Tolkien and there's like half a woman per book.
Fair point.
And I'm not, there were stories, there are reasons for that, but still half a woman per book. And then I went and read Paul Anderson's The Broken Sword, which came out the same year as The Fellowship of the Ring, I believe.
Okay.
And my Scott could tell you exactly what year that is, because he's the person in the relationship who has the head for dates. It might have been 1942. No, that doesn't sound right. Anyway, whenever it was. Mm-hmm. Paul Anderson is also working from the Nordic, the same Nordic myths that Tolkien is working from. And he's writing a sort of grittier, what we would call today more grimdark or low fantasy, more, you know, high mud fantasy. Mm-hmm. And he's got five or six different interesting, powerful women in that book. And I often wonder like where fantasy would have gone if The Broken Sword had been the book that took off huge in the 60s. Like it would be a totally different landscape. People would be writing Tolkien-esque fantasy as a reaction against, you know, the zeitgeist of, I don't know. Anyway, I'm making stuff up here. I'm fantasizing.
By the way, Colman here is doubling as our stat person. He pointed out that Broken Sword, Paul Anderson, came out 1950.
Okay. Thank you.
On the spot reporting over here in the corner. Appreciate that. So what else? One other thing that I wanted to bring up, and closer now, too long, but somebody.
Yeah, we had some technical difficulties. If you want to go a couple extra minutes, I'm fine with it.
One person that I absolutely despised in book one, but you have a sympathetic character by the time we've gotten around to book three. Hemadra. I can't remember.
Oh yeah, Hemadra. That's the person I was talking about, who seems to be a villain, but then you get his point of view and discover exactly how much he's dealing with.
Yeah, and almost, and I don't want to say it because it's not a equal thing, but just reading him In book one, he's very much one character. By the time we get to book three, I'm almost kind of picturing him as gotten the character or from Thrones.
Of course, now that you've put me on the spot, I can't remember either.
I can picture Dinklage. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Ty, I can't remember. Anyhow.
Tyrion.
Yes, thank you. Tyrion.
Yes.
And again, it's not the exact same character, but he's got that. He's got more of that depth. Like if Tyrion had been put in even, believe it or not, an even worse situation than he was, this might be who he would have become. I don't think Tyrion would ever stand up for his sister, but he definitely had the relationship with his brother where everything he's doing, it seems like it's evil, but he's doing it because he's doing it for his brothers and giving too much away.
No, I think, I mean,
book two's been out long enough that it shouldn't be a big spoiler.
Yeah, no, I think people, and there's also, you know, the whole sorceress mind control aspect of the plot, which, when you've got somebody emotionally abusive manipulating you, whether they're using magic to do it or not, sometimes you make poor choices.
and he's got other issues above and beyond that anyhow, just his physical condition.
Yeah.
I mean, he's had to deal with, you know, issues all the time. But again,
One of the things that I really like about him is that on a real level, he's doing stuff, doing what he's doing for the stability of his kingdom. Right. He's doing it out of a sense of personal responsibility and not out of a sense of aggrandizing himself, as it were. Like he's thinking about his posterity in terms of, or legacy in terms of, how can I make life better for my crushingly poor kingdom and, you know, get my kidnapped brothers back. And what people around him see is, oh my God, this guy is a terrifying warlord who raids all the border counties and kidnaps babies.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, he didn't have the best PR guy. I have to admit that. But basically, most of your characters, other than, and I'm going to mispronounce this again because I didn't write it down, is Unajari. Ari, the guy who was kidnapped his brother.
I can't think of it. Oh.
Or it begins with a U.
Anuraja.
Thank you, Anuraja.
Yes,
he's probably the only one in this list, at least that I've seen so far. Unless I find out something about him later, he is that one guy who's just simply like, you know.
He's a real dick. Yeah, he's a real dick. He's sort of my Henry VIII character.
Which actually, I thought about when we talked about. We didn't talk about it, but in your book, you know, his wives. I think that's exactly where I went. Like, kids kill the wife.
Yeah. You know, it's obviously not my fault. Yeah.
Well, you know, we're guys. Actually, I've been married. I know I have faults. She keeps a list. My wife knows my sin. She'll murder me secretly. Well, she's also a nurse, probably.
Just a little air bubble in the.
So, like I said, the other stuff that I've read in The Origin of Storms, there's a lot of stuff to talk about, but there's nothing I want to talk about before the book comes out and people get a chance to read it. Like I said, even the quotes that I picked out very specific quotes where I just love the quote, but it doesn't. But the one thing, like I said, I love, especially all of your characters, especially in a 3-book series, not a lot of time necessarily covered in 3 books, is that there's growth in all. You know, a lot of these times you might get growth 7, 8, 9 book series. Getting growth over a 2 to 3. Is it a 3-book series, by the way?
It is. It's done. Okay, it's done. I like things that have endings.
Although after Christopher Paolini, I don't know if I believe you. I haven't talked to him yet. He's like, Aragon, 3-book series. Okay, I'm going to write.
I mean, there's always the option to like go back and write more books in that world.
But the story itself is.
Yeah, but that this particular story is told.
Definitely going to have to finish it up then.
Yeah, comes to kind of a messy conclusion, but
well, I mean,
that's to be expected.
I like that. I mean, sometimes you see, we as humans want things wrapped up in a nice, neat little bow and everybody's happy at the end. I've also found that some of my favorite stories or movies even is where the ending's not. Just for an example, book, and they made a TV show out of it. Ending Jacob. I loved the end of that book because of. And if you've ever seen Rain Man,
when he I have not actually, but.
Okay, I won't say it then. There's the way that book ends is that it sets itself up for something to be said, and you're waiting for it to be said, and the movie ends and it's never said, and you're like, no. But then as I've gotten older, I'm like, you know what? Life isn't like that. I love the way that it ended, even though I'm disappointed that something was.
Yeah,
why don't you just watch Rain Man at some point? But yeah, it's a great.
I also haven't seen Groundhog Day and desperately need to. So those are like the two classic American movies that I just have not gotten around to.
I just tell people they got to watch Dead Poets.
I have seen that one.
That is probably my favorite movie. It's the only movie that I have ever paid to see.
Oh, wow.
I went with it, and then I told my best friend about it when we were in theater. And I had to make it. Only one I've ever seen twice. And if you've ever watched House.
TV show.
Yes. One of the characters in House is from. And they don't. You get a lot of shows that have Easter eggs. They don't mention it at all to like the very last season when House just looks at him and he's talking about something. Haven't you ever seen Dead Poets Society? And so that's the little Easter egg again, which I appreciate.
That's funny.
If you've seen Castle, there's a ton of Easter eggs back. Firefly.
Yeah.
The Josh Whedon show that only lasted one season. You know, they mentioned that in one of the episodes. So let me actually one thing I was going to ask earlier on. Something I've learned to ask people. What is there something that you talent, experience, something that you've done that you wish people knew?
Oh man.
Black belt ninjutsu or closet.
No. I am a reasonably competent cook. That's God, my
probably appreciates that.
Yeah, he's also a reasonably confident cook. So which I greatly appreciate. He makes a chicken paprikas that is out of this world. It is one of the best things I have ever eaten in my life. Every time, like a birthday or anniversary or whatever, and he's like, "What would you like for dinner?" I'm like, "You know what I want for dinner," because it's a production. It takes, you know, like 2 hours. So it doesn't get made very often.
That's my downside to cooking. I don't mind cooking. I hate the one. Gonna start cooking 3 hours beforehand, and I've got three different things that all end at different times, so I've got to start them all at the right time. I don't do the whole five course.
Do you remember the National Lampoon version of Dune with
that one?
Rather than a Kwisatz Haderach, they have the Kumquat Haagen-Dazs, whose superpower is that he can have everything on the table at the same time.
I do find that impressive.
So do I.
Like when you get some foods, like you can tell it finished early and it's not quite as warm as it's supposed to be, and something just got finished and hasn't rested yet. If it's a steak or something, it's like
the beans are a teeny bit crunchy, or it's always
that one in the oven a little too long. I always like it when, even if I get pasta cooked right, I'm happy. Yep, made my day. All right. So I think I've covered all of the stuff I originally had on here. One thing I always do, give a shout out to, at the end of everything, to pick whichever one you like, a brick and mortar bookstore.
Can I do two?
Yes.
Excellent. I would like to shout out two of my hyperlocal bookstores. One is Odyssey Books, which is here in lovely South Hadley, Massachusetts. And they almost, if anybody ever wants to mail order a signed copy from me, they are always happy to do it. And the other one is, Book Moon Books, which is over in East Hampton on the other side of the river, and happens to be owned by, Kelly Link and Gavin Grant, So, and I, Kelly Link and Kelly and Gavin run Lady Churchill's Rosebud Wristlet, which is a genre publication and also a small beer press. And Kelly Link is, of course, Kelly Link.
Gotcha.
Gavin is also a brilliant writer, but Kelly's a little bit more famous, I think.
It happens.
Yeah, but they also happen to run a really excellent bookstore. So.
Yep. As I tell people, I was like, I don't hate Amazon. After all, Twitch is. Mm-hmm. But I do always love giving out a shout out to Book Alone Bookstore, possible. Stop in. As you mentioned before, best place to find a new book, ask a book.
Oh, yeah.
People who do this Absolutely. Job every day. I don't know of any bookseller who doesn't. Yeah, they're going to have suggestions in the best way. And plus, I love the fact that you shout out to your. There's nothing I think more fun as having a. And knowing where your favorite author and dislike can always go. The Bookworm in here in Omaha, Eska, Rain Powell does there. So. Shout out there, but and almost every author I know has a book. If you want a signed copy? Go here. They've got my digits, mail
something. Yep.
First sign. I can.
Yeah, and they're that. Right next door to the sushi place, so I love an excuse to go there.
and again, I'm going to give a shout out here to Bear for two things. One, for joining. Earlier, and two, for rearranging her schedule a little bit, surprised my wife by coming to see. Seeing each other as my work, teamwork event thing. They went to Royals, by the way. Had to go out. Elizabeth let me off the hook last night, or sorry, Bear.
I answer to either.
But since you let me off the hook yesterday, last night, so I could go to that game, co-workers now do exist.
Proof. You could be an actor.
True. I am a life model decoy. Unfortunately, dark model. Got to deal with face dead, but it's all good. But I do appreciate the people stopping by too. We had Real Angry Hedgehog popped in and gave us a little hedgehog.
Aww.
And of course, Palamon, who's been telling me that, again, I need to work on microphone levels here because he can hear you beautifully and I'm just quieter. But again, I do apologize. Part of that is probably because of the fact that I tore everything up and brought it down with me. So I Kansas City set up. But I appreciate everybody who stopped in. This will normally, I would tell you, would be on YouTube about 24 hours later. However, I've got to pack all this up. I'm back to Omaha with me because I do have to work tomorrow night. So this may not end up getting edited, especially with it. Tuesday. I will find out when it's available. Hey, right. Look, apparently we've talked 70 minutes because.
So perfect timing.
Yeah, and I'm gonna have to figure out what's going on. They changed something. They did not bother to tell me. I may have to upgrade the next one. I don't. All right. So thank you again, Bear, for joining us. Like I said, I am going to still try to get this cast together. Bear, another. Pre-warn them that it's coming. I know people are busy. Take this jokingly. I'm not complaining that they're not back on, but I will. Together. And is there anything else other than, like I said, The Origin of Storms? Anything pipeline that you talk about?
The Origin of Storms is coming out next month, obviously. I have a newsletter, which is easy to find through my website. It is Throw Another Bear in the Canoe at Substack. The usual Twitter accounts. I am MATOCIQUALA everywhere on the internet. I'm a Google singleton. That's me.
I think thank you bringing that up, because I had to like look up your name every time I wanted to tweet you on there. What is that? How do you pronounce that? And how is, and what is the background?
So that is that's a nickname that a friend of the family who was from the Dakota Sioux gave me when I was a little girl. So she's the reason why I have, why Bear is actually my middle name. My legal last name is Wishnevsky, which is why I write as Bear. But she's the reason it means little bear in Dakota. And when I was initially on the internet, like back in 1993, because I am an old, everywhere I went, people were still very much like, oh, don't use your real name on the internet at that point in time. And so everywhere I went, Bear was already taken, and Elizabeth is a very common name. And my legal first name, my government name, Sarah, also a very common name. So I started using that. And if you really, and I just stuck with it. I probably wouldn't do it today because feelings around like what is legitimate cultural use and so forth have changed a lot since the 90s. But I also do feel like it is a name that was given to me. So right, it's
exactly.
Not, so I don't feel too bad about it.
No, I understand both ways. I understand what they're saying, but this isn't something you named yourself. Legitimate, you know, nickname from somebody gave that to you. Or if you know the background story, I don't feel that name.
I hope not. I hope it is not offensive to anyone, because it's a very, she was very dear to me. And she's gone now, you know, basically a godparent type situation.
Well, despite all the gray, I am only in my early 50s. I'm also from, kind of from that time frame. And as you can tell,
we're from the 80s.
I know. Which I don't know if you've seen that TikTok thing going around. The older generation on TikTok, you know, born in the late 90s. But as you can see, I mean, I've got, people can see the screen. It says Griftkin on there. I'm kind of from that same thing where you kind of had to make up a username. And obviously I picked Griftkin when I was gaming thing and started author interview. It's not an easy to pronounce, easy to write. Get it? Yeah. It's phonetic Griftkin, but I've stumbled over that word. I was my own. I'm like, I wish I'd picked a different username, but it's too late for that. But yes, the last thing I'm going to say again, on YouTube, when this is posted, maybe tomorrow, but probably in the next couple of days, we will have links to future social media.
That's pretty much it at this point.
And I'll also probably throw in for a couple of shout outs, maybe.
Beautiful.
Because I figure if you mentioned him, you loved him, or at least you had a reason.
Yes.
Maybe Toki, and everybody knows him already, but
yeah. Yeah, nobody needs. And I'm currently working on book 3 in the White Space continuity.
Gotcha. So, oh, I was going to ask you the Karen series. Would you have renamed that if you knew what Karen was going to
be? Well,
a different,
you know,
different meaning than the 2020s.
Yeah. Well, Karen is my mom's name.
We apologize to her for using her name as a
pejorative.
Exactly. Thank you.
And also, Karen is the name of a friend of mine, whose name I lifted for the character, Karen Memory Bruce. And so, no, I would probably keep the character name.
Okay. And we apologize.
In 20 years, we'll be calling. Sorry.
We apologize to all the Karens.
Yeah. Shout out to all the real Karens.
All the nice Karens. Yes. All the people who that's their actual name. All right. I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up on that. Like I said, this will go on YouTube shortly. And then after that, just the audio. I don't do that anymore, but I will have the same edited audio with all the junk taken out of it. Also, we'll go on Apple Podcasts. So if people want to listen to it, but you know, don't want to sit in front of the an hour. Not only come out and buy your books, maybe get a signed copy. every once in a while, I like those.
Yeah.
Right. Well, thank you again for your time. Thank you for everybody who showed up. I know I already said that, but I've tangent. Today.